This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 143. Today, AC is going to talk to Alex Pierce about Office 365 in the education space. Recorded live August the 10th, 2016. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Microsoft Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, and the competitive landscape and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Andrew Connell.
And I'm Chris Johnson.
Send us a tweet either to the show at MS Cloud Show or to Andrew at Andrew Connell.
Or Chris at LoungeFlyZ.
As we'd love to connect with you. We're just two dudes telling you how we see it. The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid NL. Valid is a Microsoft Gold partner whose mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of technology. Valid is always on the lookout for consultants, architects, and engineers. Do you know Azure, Business Intelligence and Analytics, .NET, Office 365, or SharePoint? Look them up on valid.nl. Well, good day, everybody. Yet again, two shows in a row. This is AC going solo. So last week we lost CJ due to a work issue that was going on. And I guess you'd call this one as a work issue as well. CJ is down in New Zealand at a conference. And we had scheduled our podcast today with not realizing that he was going to be at the podcast, or we did realize that we just did a bad job of managing it, and the timing just doesn't work out with how this one's going to work out. The reason why the timing doesn't work out is because we would actually be spanning pretty much the full gamut of time zones across the world to make this one work, because today we got another treat. So last week we had an interview with Kathy Du. Today we're interviewing Alex Pierce. So Alex, wanted to talk to Alex today about Office 365 in the education space. I know Alex reached out to us and we were talking to him back and forth a couple months ago about doing a show. And frankly, I totally dropped the ball. Thought I had emailed him about let's scheduling something and realized that about 2 months later when you're driving and you're thinking about future shows, and it's like, oh my God, I forgot. But hey, let me introduce Alex first. So Alex lives in Birmingham in the United Kingdom. Now you see why the timing is a little different, because it'd be Alex in the UK, me and on the East Coast of the US, and CJ would have been in New Zealand. So we would have had a huge range there of time zones. He runs his own company called BFC Networks, who specializes in Office 365 education, only education. He's a 9-time MVP for SharePoint, Office 365, and now OSS. I think that's me too, which is Office Servers and Services, I think is what it is, or Office something like that. But we're the same.
It's not OSS, as in, because some people actually think that's open source.
Yeah, exactly.
But it is Office Servers and Services, I think, yes.
I keep messing it up. I keep going back and forth.
I just say Office 365. It's so much easier.
There you go. Exactly. So Alex also blogs at alexpierce.tech, www.alexpierce.tech. He speaks at different events, and he just started his own podcast with Alan Richards, another OSS MVP, Office 365 MVP, called MS Edu Podcast, the education podcast, talking about all the news from Microsoft in the education space. So Alex, welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show. How are you doing today?
I'm good. Thank you very much. I'm a bit disappointed CJ is not able to join us as well, but I guess he's probably enjoying his time with the family and a few sheep back down in New Zealand.
You took the words right out of my mouth. We couldn't. It was going to be just the three of us on the show, but when he went to New Zealand, I told him we couldn't do four people. It would have been three people and a sheep, and I was like, oh, we just can't do that. So
I thought, having heard the podcast that came out the other day, I thought, I've got to get the sheep comment back in somehow.
Yeah, so you said you just listened to the listener survey one that we did.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, it came out yesterday from my point of view, and I was out walking the dog, so I thought that's when I normally listen to it. It wasn't on your survey as an opportunity, but I thought, you know, I'll put it down as an exercise, I guess, more than anything else.
There you go. Yeah, that was interesting. We had a lot of fun reading through the comments and the feedback from everybody on what people liked and what they didn't like. And when you do something like this, right, you're in the same thing with like a blog, or when you don't have any kind of feedback, or you have very little feedback. So I know you've just started a podcast. The one thing I would strongly recommend to anybody doing a podcast is start an email newsletter right off the bat. That's the biggest regret that we have. Once we did that, we started getting so much more engagement from our listeners. We thought that they would leave comments on the show or write us or tweet us or something. And we get a little bit on Twitter, but man, since we did that email list, we're getting so much more engagement with our listeners. If you're starting a podcast or you're working on a podcast, I definitely recommend having an email list if you don't already have one. And if you're listening to this show, make sure you sign up to ours. You just go to our website, microsoftcloudshow.com, and there's a little widget making it easy to sign up.
Well, we haven't done that, but we'll do that. We've just done our first interview talking about one of the things, actually. We're going to talk about the OneNote class notebook as it is, but we'll certainly get that set up and let people know when that's available. And it's exciting times for us, whether we would get as many survey results back as you do. We have certainly had one tweet, somebody saying, really looking forward to episode 2. And I'm thinking, yes, we've got a listener. I don't care if it's more than one, but at least we've got one, kind of thing. So it's nice little kind of motivation to keep going in that kind of way.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. So if people want to check out the podcast, they want to subscribe to it, where would you send them to go learn more about it?
Well, we've got the website, so we've got the msedupodcast.com. So you can go there and you can listen to it directly through the browser if you want to, if you're in your office desk or just kind of thing. You don't have to have a podcast necessarily to be able to listen to it, or you can get it either on iTunes at the moment. And I was hoping to get a few tips of whereabouts we need to be able to find it for where you guys post yours, which obviously always might help your listeners as well.
Oh yeah, it's we find, what do we do? I should share you what we do to syndicate the show. We made a bunch of changes recently. Let's see, our listeners probably picked up on a lot of this too. In March or April and May, we had a bunch of work that we did specifically around Twitter, where we use Zapier to not only grab the feeds from a couple of different sites. So things like the Office 365 blogs, the Azure blog, the AWS blog, a couple of places that are really pertinent to the stuff that we do, that we talk about. And when they have a tweet that goes out, we grab that tweet, we replace it, some stuff in that tweet, do some string replacement. So if it mentions Azure, we replace it with add Azure. And then we quote it, we put it on a queue using Buffer, and we send all those tweets out. So it helps kind of get the word out. People see that those sources see that we're talking about their stuff. They turn around. We've seen them actually retweet some of our shows. We saw Mark Vucinovich even retweeted a couple of our shows that we put out there for Azure. He noticed the stuff that we were doing as well that way. But then we also go post all of our shows to the Office 365 and Office Development Reddit subreddits. And we see a bunch of listeners come in from that. So as far as publishing the show, I mean, iTunes definitely, Stitcher, Google Play. Microsoft is actually funny. It's really hard to actually get your podcast published on the Microsoft like Play or Store or whatever they use. You have to know a specific email address to send your link to, and there's a vendor that will go in and manually add you. And the email address has changed since we did it, so now I don't even know who even manages it.
That's community effort from them, though.
Exactly. So, there's a bunch of different, there's a couple of different sources we use, and then it's just from there, it's just word of mouth. So coming on shows like this will get you mentioned.
That's hopefully people, if they like it, then please do subscribe and have a listen. And hopefully you kind of get a bit of a glimpse of the kind of things that we talk about around Microsoft Classroom, Office Forms, OneNote Class Notebook, all things that probably that people haven't heard of, but are widely used across the 300 million licenses that are out there from Office 365 Education.
That's a great transition into just diving right into it, I think, because that's the thing, CJ and I, when you reached out to us and we're like, yeah, that'd be a great topic to talk about. And I realized, I'm like going, I don't really, aside from a license and one or two of these things that I've heard about, like the Microsoft Classroom, I don't know anything about this stuff. So, I mean, my kids at the school where they go to school, our county has Office 365. He comes home and he's like, yeah, I've got to figure out how to use this thing called OneNote. And I have this thing called OneDisk. I'm like, OneDrive? He's like, yeah, OneDrive. So we started going through all these things, and it was like, and I'm looking at it like, oh, this is really cool. And of course, now the teachers are starting to ask me like, well, how do I do this? And how do I do this? I'm like, I'm a dev. I can build it for you. But like the user stuff, this isn't my, anyway. But hey, so why don't we just dive into it? So as far as like Microsoft and education or the spin with Office 365 here, what is Microsoft doing in the education space? What do you guys see? The idea of this episode is to kind of bring the awareness to our listeners to make sure they understand, you know, what things Microsoft is doing in the education space, specifically around Office 365. So what can you tell us? What is Microsoft doing in the education space?
It's worth first starting off kind of around the structure at Microsoft and how they deal with education. They don't have a health department. They don't have necessarily a government department, but they do have an education department. They have an education engineering team. So it just shows you that their commitment to education is huge. So this is where we're focusing on around Office 365. We're talking around Windows. You know, they've got a whole dedicated team just specializing in the education And I mean, as a VP for education, all that kind of stuff. So it shows that they're really committed to this. And they've kind of shifted in the last 5 years to more of this, get them young, they'll want it when they're older, which has kind of very been that Apple kind of thing over the years. So it's great to see, you know what, Office 365 education is free, equivalent to an E3 license, but there's a few other things. So schools would have to sign up and get it. All they have to do is prove their domain ownership, and Microsoft go and do a check to make sure you know what that website is, a school. It's not as if a business is going to go off and get it. But it just kind of goes, you know what, our commitment is that we want to give and make it as easy as we possibly can, as well as compete with Google, of course, because they're doing it. But let's give them Mail, let's give them OneDrive, let's give them the Office Suite, let's link that to their license agreement, let's give them Skype, let's give them Yammer, let's give them all the things that you guys talk about, but let's give it to them for free instead.
So when you say that there's a group at Microsoft just on education, is that a Microsoft thing, or is that an Office thing, or Office 365 thing? Is it a company-wide thing?
It's a company-wide thing. There are some people within MOD, I'm not sure if it's still called that, the MOD, but the Microsoft Office Division, I think it's called. And there are people who just specialize in education from there, as well as a particular education engineering team and a marketing team, and working with kids and working with university students, as well as then working with partners. So just education partners. So I've got a great partner manager in the UK who just specializes with education.
Oh, that's cool. What kind of thing is this? It's a Microsoft company thing. And I know we're talking about Office 365, but does that also span over to Windows or to some of their other stuff as well, where they've mixed in the education piece?
Yeah. So for example, we got Windows 10 Anniversary Edition. I think it's only come out in the last week. There's an education version for that. So there's Windows 10 Education. And so for one of the things that they've done, they're trying to make it easier for teachers to be able to configure laptops. So in the UK, you've got primary schools, I think like elementary schools in the US, a device comes in and kind of, well, I have to wait for my technician to come in for a week now before I can actually get this configured. Well, a teacher can now be given a USB stick. They stick it in. It takes the default build that's there for Windows 10, installs everything how it needs to be, and then they've got a classroom machine built for them straight away. So it's kind of empowering the teachers and all that kind of thing to make it easy as possible they can do. So that's what Windows have done. There's public sector pricing, certainly in the UK, from an Azure point of view, to make it cheaper. And then, of course, you've got 365, and that's kind of where we see where most things are actually going. And, of course, one will also talk about Minecraft.
Yeah. I definitely want to hear about that. We're definitely going to get to that piece, too. That's interesting, because I know last year, I think it was last year, it might have been 2 years ago, where my kids go to school at a primary. For you, it's a primary school, it's an elementary school. So they're both 7 and 11, so it's what I think I've got. First day of school is today, so I think it's sixth grade is the first one, is for my older one, and second grade is for my younger one. And for my older one, last year in fifth grade, they were all looking to get laptops. They were all going to get laptops from the school. But I know there was a huge bit about like configuring them, getting them up and running and everything, and they're in these big like locked closets that are mobile and they can plug the one thing into the wall and it charges all of them. But I know the whole configuration thing was a big deal for them. So it's cool to hear that they've actually made it a lot easier. A lot of times, you know, the teachers were just like, yeah, we've got them, but we don't know, we can't. And it's funny because I talked to one or two of the teachers. They understand. I mean, it's not like they're like, you know, computer idiots or something. They don't know how to get everything set up, but they get them like going, no, we have specific rules around schools and we don't really know how we're supposed to set these up or what we're supposed to do. Having a USB stick would have been a hell of a lot easier just to go through and to flash the things and make it easier to roll it out instead of them to get somebody from the IT group to actually go through and do that.
That's it. And some primary schools will only get somebody in half a day a week. And that's it. Technical support is only half a day a week. So how are they going to set up 20 machines? How are they going to fix all the other problems when I used to work in a school, the kids used to nick the mice balls underneath. You had to super glue them on to make sure that they didn't get kind of there. And if you were a bit unlucky with the super glue, that mouse is then out the bin. You've got to stick it in the bin because the ball's now stuck to the mouse. So I mean, it's one of those things that you've got to try and do. And anything that can make it easier for them. And that's why sometimes I talk about domain join, Azure AD domain join, because you just log on with your Office 365 account, and because we've configured Office 365 and Azure AD for you, or if they've bought an Intune license, then all of a sudden the device is configured for the teacher and they can just go. And that's what it needs to be for them. It needs to be as easy as it possibly can, certainly in that kind of elementary, middle school, high school kind of thing. Obviously, they've got a bit more of a budget to help them from that point of view. So any of these technologies all support each other, and that's kind of where the education side of things have really gone forward to to help those.
Yeah, that makes
and help the teachers.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, you're right. It once we have the ability to do like with Azure AD and the domain join and having everything set up, now that you can join the machine with one login, you can join the machine right away and get all your settings and stuff. That is a huge benefit or a huge move in the right direction, not just the education space, but for on the private side, from the commercial side, all the way up to the businesses and stuff, being able to log in that way makes it a lot easier.
Yeah.
So let me ask you a little bit about Office 365 and education space. I mean, I know that you mentioned earlier that there's a specific license you can get for Office 365 that's education. And then there's one that's also for enterprise. And you made a comment earlier about how an education license is basically an E3 with some extra stuff. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Like, what are people getting or what are they not getting when they get an education license?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, some of these are actually around the actual education specific things that they've added to the tenant, but a school can go and sign up now. And I say school, I mean, it could be a special needs school, it could be an academy, it could be anybody who is an education establishment of some sorts. So it's quite broad, really. I'm very open. I think Microsoft are quite open to letting people in education, wherever you're doing education, to be able to do this. So you've got the normal traditional E1, E3, and E5 kind of things is the kind of go. An E1 license, or the education license as it's called, comes with your standard SharePoint, your OneDrive, your Exchange, but it also comes with the E3 part of the security and compliancy. So actually you get your e-discovery, you've got your ability to add certain rules around Exchange for your credit card details and all that kind of thing. So it's kind of Microsoft going, you know what, we want to give education an E1, but we also recognize that there needs to be some extra security enhancements to help protect the kids and actually taking them forward. So we'll kind of mix and match. And that's the standard license, and that's free. And schools can go to office.com/teachers, I think it is, and just sign up, and it creates a tenant for them, and they get that. There's also something called the Education Plus tenant. And what that is it links your EES agreement. So enterprises get an enterprise license agreement. Microsoft have got something called the EES agreement with schools, colleges, universities. And what they do is they go off and from there, they also get Office 365 Pro Plus as part of that. So actually, and what's really cool is Microsoft got something called Friction Free, is what it was when it was kind of codenamed. But the kids can go to office.com/teachers or office. Well, that's the teacher side, obviously. The students go to a slightly more complicated URL, which is office.com/getoffice365. Why can't it just be /students? I don't know. that would make too much common sense, really. But what happens there, they put in their domain name, it goes off and does a record search in the background and go, we found your license agreement. We're automatically going to add the licenses to your tenant and give you Office 365 Pro Plus, and then you can use that on your 5 devices.
Oh my goodness, that makes it a lot easier.
So instantly you've got it. You don't have to worry about it, and you can keep going on there. The good thing is it adds 1 million faculty licenses and 500,000, no, other way around, 1 million student licenses and 500,000 faculty licenses.
For that domain.
For that tenant. So that's 1.5 million. Yes.
Oh my goodness. That's huge. Why so many? That seems a bit.
I think it's because there's some tenants out there that are huge. We're talking, there's tenants, there's one that covers the whole of Malaysia, I believe. There's one that covers the whole of Wales, the whole of Scotland. Some districts, I'm sure, are pretty big in America. We're talking, there are some massive tenants out there. So if people say to me, does Office 365 scale? Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be bigger than almost even the biggest organizations I'm thinking about that I know are on Office 365. That blows away some of the numbers that they've got.
Exactly. So I'm not worried about economy of scale when it comes to it. What I like to do is I like to log into the SharePoint admin area and go, 1.5 million licenses. How much SharePoint storage is that? Because we're talking petabytes worth of data.
Yeah.
I mentioned you got the free licenses and the plus licenses. Well, when you add the free ones, it gives you 1.5 million licenses. So all of a sudden you can have 3 million licenses in your tenant. Each of that gives you a gig of storage. One of the things that we've started doing with schools is going, look, you've got your SAN at school. You've got all your shared drives. Let's build out your SharePoint site structure and go, right, let's move all that SAN storage into SharePoint storage. Let's turn your SAN off and save you the cost and the storage. in your school and having it all in 365 instead.
So that brings up two questions then, one around like migrating for people, for organizations that, like you said, they already have investments like on-prem and they want to be able to move this stuff to the cloud for everything they're already getting for free. And then that also brings up another question around, well, what about provisioning? I mean, you've got, you know, if you're going to bring a new school district online, you're going to bring a university online or a primary education site online. What is that kind of onboarding? What is that provisioning of all the different SharePoint sites? What does that look like? So I take it you've been involved in both migration and provisioning, like from going from, say a school's got like an exchange like 2007 on-prem. What do those stories look like? Is the migration any different from what you would normally see in like a normal migration?
No, it's exactly the same because it's the same technology at the end of the day. I mean, normally you get I get a school call me, email me, say, oh, we want to put email in Office 365 and do other stuff. And the first thing I go is, no, let's go back and do another work stream first. Let's do identity.
Yeah.
Because if you can't log into Office 365 where all your data is, what's the point?
Exactly.
So we go off and we talk about it. We normally talk about, I define them as common sign-on or true single sign-on. So common sign-on being where we're using more than like AD Connect to be able to do same username, same password kind of thing, and then ADFS to be able to do kind of that integrated stuff. I certainly find from a university's point of view, they want they're a bit more like enterprises. They want that whole fully available integrated logon, all that kind of thing. And when we're syncing users, we're syncing tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of users, because that's how big the identity parts are for those. Certainly for primary schools, elementary schools, they may well go off, oh, I'll just create them myself. I don't mind them having another one. Or they may well buy into a third-party solution that does, that kind of pulls it out of the MIS, the school timetabling system, or that kind of thing, and goes off and creates it. So there are lots of different providers out there that are doing that kind of thing of pull the timetable out, stick it in calendars, sticking it in, creating usernames, doing the authentication, all that kind of thing. The other bit that you mentioned was that the kind of the migration. We know there's certain SharePoint limits for site collections. We know that there's 1 terabyte for per site collection with about 20,000 items in a document library. So all of a sudden they say, oh, can I lift and shift this whole 20 terabytes worth of data? It's a no. So we kind of go through an evaluation process. We've got some nice PowerShell scripts that we go off, evaluate the data, check to make sure, you know what, let's split it down because you've got staff and you've got student. Let's create a site collection for staff art and staff biology, staff chemistry. And we've got some nice apps that we use to help from an image navigation so people can navigate around and do permissions there and kind of take the opportunity to go, you know what, that root folder's got one called new folder, new folder 2, and new folder 3, and new folder 4. Do we really need to create a site collection called new folder, new folder 2, and all that kind of thing? So it's kind of a nice opportunity to do a bit of a data cleansing and to move data across. And it can be quite simple. It can be quite complicated depending on how deep folders are and all that kind of thing.
You know, it'd be great if some of these tools that we use these days, if they would have like just a default search for some of those things that you know that are on your machine, but you're kind of looking at it like, how in the world am I going to get rid of this? Like every time I want to go move mail around in Exchange and move it from my inbox to put it somewhere else to keep it track of it. In the list of all my recent folders, I must have untitled folder like 5 or 6 times. Yeah. It literally says untitled folder. I look through my inbox, I'm like, I can't find these damn folders. And I want to get rid of them, but yeah. I know that I just created one either by accident or intentionally, and I hit something that took the focus off, and it didn't. So it just started with untitled folder. It's same thing with like new folder. And yeah. I know it's there, I just got to get rid of it. And it's like, there's got to be a tool like going, find all my untitled folders and remove them, or find all my new folders and new folder, you know, star at the end of it. And if there's nothing in them, can we just blow them away?
I had one customer who decided that, you know what, some of these files are so old, I'm going to delete everything that's older than 3 years.
Ooh,
like, that's... Not delete, but archive, obviously. So okay, he did, and there's only one person who logged the call saying they couldn't find their files.
No kidding.
And it wasn't actually he couldn't find his files. He says, you know what, last time I logged into Mass, I saw sure there was about 50 folders, but now there's only about 12. Is everything all right? So it just shows that actually sometimes this data is so irrelevant and nobody knows what's really there that you can just take it out. I don't recommend anybody goes out and does that without some serious thinking. I'm not saying that, but it just makes you think sometimes how relevant is data still and what's being moved over.
I have a NAS at my house, and I know for sure that there's a lot of that falls in that same category. I've got stuff from my first job that I worked on. I was like, I might need this. I'm like, no, I think I'm done with the whole classic ASP thing. I probably don't need to keep that project around anymore.
Yeah, that's fair enough to get that.
Yeah, so one of the questions I had was that when you are working in the education space, do you see
really anything that's really all that different from working with the enterprise space in terms of, like, I know the technology is all basically the same. And I know that there are some things that Microsoft offers that I want to get into, like the OneNote class notebook and the classroom, and we'll talk a little bit about forms and stuff. But is there anything that's like, that's really, you see is really different between the two?
I don't actually. I know you said in my intro that there's, I don't really deal with education, but I only deal with education, but when I've got an enterprise one, and I don't see any differences. I don't feel like there's still the same challenges around provisioning, around data management, security. If anything, security needs to be just as high because we're talking about student data. Something called individual learning plans here in the UK is there, and that talks about maybe what the special individual needs are for the student. So we want to make sure that actually the data is secure, that we want to use integrated right management to make sure that that doesn't get accidentally shared out, or if it is sent in an email, it's encrypted, all that kind of thing. So we're kind of using all the same technologies, but just using them in a different kind of way to ensure data sovereignty and data security.
That makes sense. All right, so let me talk a little bit here about some of these specific offerings that Microsoft has for education, for schools. So one that comes to mind is the OneNote class notebook. What is this? What can you say about this?
So this has been added to the app launcher. So Microsoft have added this to the app launcher, or the waffle in the the top left-hand corner when any teacher logs into Office 365. So it's kind of part of the faculty license, you could say. And what it does, it goes out and builds a OneNote notebook into the teacher's OneDrive and shared with all the students, but also builds it out into a structure. Now, the actual structure and all that kind of thing is the irrelevant part. It's how it's used in the classroom. But let me tell you a bit about the structure first. So what it does, it kind of creates three areas. It creates a collaboration area, a content area, and then an area for each of the students within the class. So one of the great things that I love about the co-authoring with Office Online is that multiple people can use the file at the same time. So one of the ways that we kind of work with some schools with one of our products is that why doesn't a teacher log on to the Word document at the same time as the students using it and see how they're forming words and sentences? Because, spell check is great, but if they're always using the wrong there during their sentence, grammar is going to pick them up. So actually the teacher can see that they're using there in the wrong way and then go and speak to the student and say, actually, this is the different ways that you use there. So actually, we're using co-authoring for learning here, kind of thing.
Oh, that makes sense.
The collaboration area is a way that lots of students can work together at the same time within this kind of OneNote area.
So it's more using collaboration more for learning than it is more for being like on the productivity side. It's more just a context difference between business and education.
Yeah. And then there's a content area, which is where the teacher can post resources and kind of students can just go and view them. And then they've got their individual area. So the teacher might go, you know what, go off and write me an essay on this. And they'll write it into OneNote. And then if you've got a touch device of some sort, then you can go in with a teacher with a pen on your Surface device or whatever it may well be and circle the bits that you like, highlight, tick them, give audio feedback to the students. If you start thinking about that from a maths equations point of view, it's easy to then write those kind of things. So you've got lots of classrooms and you may well see them in meeting rooms where you've got these whiteboards. Well, the teacher's actually then drawing all their whiteboard stuff that's on their notebook, going into their OneNote class notebook. The students can take the copy of that, put it into their own private area, and then put their own notes next to it. And actually, I think everybody can actually take that as an opportunity to do those kind of things.
Yeah, that's really cool because I know I'm thinking about like the way that my teachers interact with my kids, and it's definitely could be a better workflow than what I normally see them do. Like between writing, it makes it easier to also be able to share it with your parents or something like that instead of having to have, you know, tons of stuff being moved around between school and keeping, being able to provide provide a audio note too to kind of explain what's going on and stuff instead of trying to have like a conversation over email with the teacher following up or something. That definitely seems like a huge, not only being much more efficient, but also a richer experience for both the student and the educator.
Yeah, I think a really good way of thinking about it, it's digitalizing the notebook that they might have in there, their school book or whatever it may well be. Yeah. But then, of course, we can put images in it. We can put links. The teacher can then do assignment grades based on a particular quiz that they've given them, and that all gets logged. And so it's a really nice way of being able to, share everything that goes on in the classroom. Of course, kids can take photos and add them to the notebook. So if they've worked on a piece of work together, doing a brainstorm or something like that on an A3 piece of paper, take a photo, add it to notebook. it can be searched, it can be OCR, and the characters can all come up. It's a great learning tool to be able to get all these notes, and obviously if you're going to be taking it into your exams, you've always got it with you.
Do you see different levels of education actually using this more than others? Like, as I'm hearing you talk about this, I know that there's a lot of people like at the school where we are that aren't even aware of the fact of what they have. I mean, they have Office 365, but they don't have, I know that they're not using a lot of these different things. Like, they're not using the OneNote class notebook, but it makes a lot of sense to me. So how much of this stuff do you see that they don't, that they're not even aware, or how do they find out about this, about these different things that are in Office 365? And the, when you have an Office 365 education license, are these things kind of pushed to you to make you aware of it, or is it just one of those things that's out there and someone's going to come talk to you about it?
It's one of those things that we kind of see from an enterprise point of view. It just gets added to the tenant all of a sudden. You might just see this icon appear in the waffle or wherever it may well be. And Microsoft have got a really good site. I'm not too sure whether it's still funded or it is funded. I don't know where exactly the funding goes. Fund the Gates Foundation helped put a lot of money back into education and Skype in the classroom and all that kind of thing. And that's called MEC, or the Microsoft Educator Community. And it's got training material on there. You can get this badging system to show exams. So it's kind of, what did you learn about Exchange? What do you think about OneNote? What do you with OneDrive? So kind of there goes a way that you can, one, you can find out more about it, but also at the same time, you can get trained on it as well. So it's actually quite a useful thing more than anything else.
Yeah, I just found the link to that, education.microsoft.com. That kind of, go figure, but that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So that's kind of where you can. I think the actual OneNote class notebook has a website itself. I can't remember off the top of my head, but maybe we can put it into the show notes so you can do it. But I think it's something like OneNoteForTeachers.com. I think it literally is that.
Awesome.
And there's loads of materials on there and people are explaining how they do it. There's also, Microsoft have got this program for teachers. I guess it's kind of a bit like the MVP thing, but for teachers, called MEES, they're called, Microsoft Innovative Educators. And a lot of those kind of do webcasts around, this is how you can use OneNote, this is how you can use it in the classroom, this is how you can do annotating, we work with the students and all that kind of thing. So it's quite nice in that kind of way.
As you were talking about that, I found the link. It's OneNoteForTeachers.com. I'll make sure that that's these links, the things that we're throwing out here, just like we always do, we'll put these in our show notes so you'll have them both not only on the site, but in whatever app that you're using to listen to the podcast, they'll be listed in there as well. So yes, you make sure you find them that way. So another thing too, aside from the OneNote class notebook, you want to talk a little bit about the Microsoft Classroom. What is the Microsoft Classroom?
It kind of brings in, I mentioned Google once or twice. So Microsoft, Google have got something, called Google Classroom. So hence why there's now something called Microsoft Classroom. And I think it's a big thing more from a US point of view than necessarily the UK. But there's a big real rivalry kind of going on over the services that Google already offer for the classroom, and Microsoft not kind of just giving you the standard stuff that's out there from an enterprise point of view, which is why I think we've seen this tune of more education tenants having their own kind of almost delivery and roadmap as it is. But Classroom, I have to say, is probably the best application I've seen built on top of Office 365 Groups and the Microsoft API. And I would happily show anybody that. And I think I've done a couple of webinars on it as well, kind of talking about what a group is first. So obviously you've got your conversations, you've got your notebook, your documents, and a few other things. So the first thing is the Classroom has the OneNote class notebook built into the notebook section of a group. So it's stored within the group, but it's a separate web page. So if you go to classroom.microsoft.com, you log in there, and it's an assignment-based tool. So I can take a document, I can assign it to my 20 students in the class. They all get their own version of it. It goes into their OneDrive. The teacher can view that work. They can leave comments on it and then give it a final score once the deadline's hit, or if the student said, I want to send it back to this teacher for some kind of review or something like that, they can have internal conversation. So it's a nice little assignment-based tool, very similar to what Google Classroom can do if you're familiar with that.
That's cool. Yeah, it's all at classroom.microsoft.com. Are those webinars you talked about that you've done on Microsoft Classroom, are those public things that people can
actually... Yeah, it's on YouTube. I can send you the link if you want, and we can get it added.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, we'll make sure we put those in the show notes. Having additional things, we're not going to do a complete deep dive in this. We can go on for quite a while here, but I want to be able to give people links to this stuff. Actually, a lot of this stuff too, I want to be able to go back to my school. We just did orientation for the first day of school yesterday, and my son's in a computer class for the first time this year, and so I'm curious to kind of share some of these things and see what she thinks, or what they actually do about what his teacher thinks about it.
One of the things I would encourage anybody, a lot of people who work for large enterprises may get 2 or 3 days of community work. go down to your local school, give them some hand, get some computers set up for them, get Office 365 set up for them, help them out, training them a little bit on these tools because you know them. Mm-hmm. So let's help out the younger generation to get hold of these tools and get the classroom going in this kind of way.
You know, I tell you, it's interesting you say that too, because one thing that I found as my kids are starting to get deeper into their elementary ed, my son's school is a big user of Edmodo, I think is what it is.
Yeah.
Which looks very much like a private education version of Facebook. But it's they have chats on there back and forth with other students. They have chats with their teachers. Their teachers put assignments in there. It's interesting to see that. And you kind of look at it and I see the same kind of thing over in Office 365. And it's, I guess, you know, part of it too is, you know, you use what you're familiar with. And I know that a lot of the teachers are familiar with Edmodo, but I'm seeing a lot of the other functionality too that you're talking about here that would be definitely valuable for them. I know one thing that they actually run into, we had a listener question come up about this. I know this is a huge topic when it comes to Office 365 and to long time like SharePoint developers and stuff. But as we've done a couple times, I sent an email out to all of our listeners and I asked if you want to submit any questions. And I got a question here from Robert Woods. I'm glad he asked this. I know we were going to talk about this. So Robert wanted to ask you if you've had a chance to use the new Microsoft Forms that were recently outlined on Microsoft's blog. There's a blog post that I'll link to in the show notes from June the 20th of 2016, titled Microsoft Forms, a new formative assessment and survey tool in Office 365 Education. So, and then continuing on Robert's question, do you see them as a valuable or suitable replacement for InfoPath? So why don't I get you to weigh in on the whole Forms thing too? Everyone else has done it, right? It's like, what?
Yeah. Let's give it a very simple answer of, no, it's not replacement for InfoPath.
Okay.
The reason is because it's just a separate website that's built on the top of Azure AD. That's all it actually is. It's not actually integrated with Office 365 in any kind of way that I can see at this moment in time. So, for example, it's a bit like SurveyMonkey. You go off, you build up your quizzes, it can do answers and give you the answers, and then it spits it all out onto a web page for you, or you can click on Export to Excel and you download an Excel file. So it doesn't even save it to your OneDrive. Now, they may well have added that, or they're adding that. I believe I've seen it on the Edu user voice. Mm-hmm. So I think that's edu.uservoice.com. So that actually that just shows the commitment of Microsoft. You've got Xbox, you've got Office 365, you've got OneDrive.uservoice.com. Well, you've got an education one. So, but that's exactly kind of what it is. It's there to compete from a Google point of view because they've got a kind of a form service. But it's a nice way of being able to easily go off and create forms, responsive design. You get a QR code, which is quite nice. If the kids have got their mobile devices, they can pull them up on their phone and they can answer them very quickly using the responsive device, the responsive design on their phone, and be able to teach and get back those responses, see the answers, and kind of annotate it from there.
So, okay, so using Microsoft Forms in the education space, it sounds a lot like it's very much like Google Forms, where it's a way for you to easily go through and to collect input from someone, but then it doesn't have there's not a lot of workflow on the back end to it. You can go manually grab those pieces, or you can always go hook it up with other tools. Like I know that we use for like our survey that we did for the podcast, we used Google Forms because it works, because it's easy, and all the responses are saved in an Excel spreadsheet. But the way we have it set up too is that when someone would put their email address in, when they would do the listener survey, they would actually get automatically added to our mailing list. We use Zapier to go through and to wire it up on the back end. That every time a form was submitted, kick off a Zap would go through and it would do these different things and stuff. And I would guess then with the other Microsoft product that they've recently come out, it's also on the Azure side. I think it's called Flow.
Flow, yeah.
Flow very much feels like a hosted version of Workflow. I know it's always been hosted, but it still seems like it's a hosted version with almost like your if this, then that, and Zapier kind of way of being able to wire things together and such.
Yeah, and I agree. And we can get Flow and all that kind of thing in there. But just to say that Forms, it definitely isn't a replacement for InfoPath because it is just a completely separate product that's just built on top of the authentication for Azure AD.
And then so they would be, the schools would then be responsible, or whoever's building the form on Microsoft Forms would then have to figure out how that data is going to come back into the school or how it's going to be managed that way.
Yeah, so they may well just take it and put it in their own Markbook or into their own Excel or download that spreadsheet and then copy and paste it wherever they may well need it more than anything else.
Gotcha.
There isn't that much. There is requests to have it integrated into Classroom, for example. Well, that makes sense because you've got a group, you've got the ability to do assignment. Well, now let's build it so you can build a quiz within your Microsoft Classroom and it just goes to those 20 kids that you've got within it.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Let me ask you this then. So you've mentioned the term a couple times. I guess I just did as well. But how do you see like Microsoft's education offering, specifically with Office 365, standing up against like what Google does around the same space, around education space? Do you see them as kind of, they're basically on par with each other? Do you see one kind of being more suited to the other? I know you focus a lot on the Microsoft side, but I mean, I'm sure you've run into the Google offering a few times.
Yeah, well, of course, we got to go off and do Google Compete sometimes and explain kind of, this is what Microsoft are doing. And that's kind of where the conversation is. This is what Microsoft are doing, not necessarily this is what you get from Office 365. So I actually make it more of Google versus Microsoft. And from my point of view, it's going, you know what, you're going to get Windows. You get the ability to set up Windows easily now on a three-click process like we've already talked about. We've also got, you can build your VMs in the cloud and you can do a domain join. So all of a sudden, you don't need any servers now on-prem. You can have all your devices and the kids can join Azure AD. We still haven't talked about 365 yet.
Yeah.
So actually, there's so much more of a story that's there available for students more than anything else, then actually, why consider too much in that kind of way?
It definitely makes it easier. I mean, it's going to bring costs down for schools and such, but it's also to be able to do this, be able to have more of the stuff moving to the cloud and making it where you don't have to have an IT group that's going to be managing all this stuff for you on-prem and all the infrastructure and the hardware and stuff. I mean, let's face it, unfortunately, in a lot of countries, at least in my country, education does not get the kind of funding that it should get. I shouldn't say probably, that in my opinion, it doesn't get the funding that it should get. It always seems that's where governments like to cut stuff. So any ways that we can make things more efficient, cheaper, but also be able to provide more services and stuff that makes it a lot about. So what about like, you mentioned something about Office 365 Groups PLC. What exactly is that?
So this is a feature that I'm surprised to see, and you guys may well be surprised. When it basically, what does it build an Office 365 group and builds OneNote into a particular structure within that 365 group. So it kind of helps with CPD, and the idea is that teachers can work collaboratively together in that notebook. That's the idea of it. But when you go into your Outlook, you click on Create Group, you're then given a selection of templates that you can select groups from. Where's that? Well, hang on a minute. We can slate groups. We can actually have group templates. Is that a feature that we're going to see from an enterprise point of view, that I, as a business, can say, I've got now these five different Office 365 group templates that I can go off and it goes and provisions document folders within document library, something within the notebook, add connectors? I don't know. It's just, I thought, you know what, it'd be worth bringing it up to say, sometimes you see things in other products and other areas that you don't know even exist that are in the product.
So that's only something that we see in the education space. We don't see that in the enterprise licenses. Is that what you're saying?
I've not seen it anywhere else other than the education. So that's only in US tenants at the moment, but I'm sure it'll be worldwide everywhere else from an education point of view. But it's like, well, hello, a minute. Where's that feature? Where can I build my templates? I'd love to be able to go off and build templates in that kind of way.
Yeah.
But that's what we can do with the API, I guess, from the Microsoft Graph API to be able to go off and do that kind of thing.
Gotcha. So I know another question that I've got. I mean, my kids would love to hear this. So I have to be honest, I'll get them to listen to this episode. They may fast forward right up to this point of the interview here. But Minecraft. So when Microsoft put the purchase out for Minecraft many, many years ago, or not many years ago, just a couple years ago. And one of the things that they had when they actually brought this up, they said something along the lines of that it made a lot of sense in the education space. What do you know about that? Because I looked at it and I was like going, okay, I get the whole like spatial awareness and blocks, but education?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, it's being used in the classroom. It's been used in the classroom for years now as a way of being able to get students to learn those kind of things that you just talked about. I mean, we talk about, you know what, we need to get kids nowadays to learn more about coding. Logical steps on that's actually required. And this is kind of where you see it from an augmented reality point of view now. Kids love augmented reality because it kind of gets them gripped into something that is very different. So I think we'll see kind of what happens a lot with Minecraft, but there is a special edition coming out called Minecraft Education, surprisingly. And you're going to be able to log in with your Office 365 education account into Minecraft.
Really?
So you can download, yeah. Huh. So you can download the client. Some of the criticism is that maybe it only works with Windows 10, but maybe we'll see some updates that will come so it works, but it's going to come as an app, so it will be in the Windows App Store. You can download, you type in your username and password, and you can log into a Minecraft environment.
So I know that there's, I mean, I've seen things where Minecraft is being used in the education piece. I mean, I, so a year or two ago, I got my son there was a Kickstarter called Kano. I know it was based out of the UK, where they took a Raspberry Pi and they put two or three of the pieces together, and they made it very easy to stand up your own little computer. You just, all you need is a power source and a plug, an internet connection, and an HDMI port to hit the, go right into a monitor. But the stuff with like with Kano, you can actually take it's got Minecraft built into it, and they can actually take Minecraft and do things like it helps them, like go through and program, do a little bit of programming stuff with Minecraft, actually change the way it works and stuff. But it's done in an education kind of way, kind of a learning kind of a way. So it's an interesting kind of like taking a game and making it to where they can control things like that. It's really cool to see where they're going to go with this, but I'm really curious to see. I know my kids are really interested to see where they go with it.
Yeah, I think that if anything, they'll be disappointed when they first get their hands on it. But I think we'll see in the next 12 months education stuff that's going to go into it. It may well be they build a curriculum that's based in Minecraft. You go in and you're learning about the whole maths, I forgot what it's called now, maths engineering sciences and all that kind of thing inside Minecraft. Well, what a great way of engaging students to learn more stuff.
Awesome. That's cool. That's a good idea. Definitely a good idea.
Maybe something I can come back on and talk a bit more about when we know a bit more about what they're going to do with it.
Absolutely. We definitely should do that. Actually, and let me ask you, so we've gone through a bunch of different stuff here, talked about a bunch of different things from the OneNote class notebook, from the Microsoft Classroom, forums, Minecraft. Is there anything here that you think that our listeners should be aware of that you want to share with them on the education, as far as Office 365 and education, aside from definitely going to your podcast to learning more and getting more deep dives on where on what you guys are going to be going into?
I think we mentioned one or two of them. And I think if your parents out there or anything really, just kind of going, you know what, if you're going to buy a device for the kids, maybe buy one that has a pen. So then they can use OneNote and they can draw within it. They can use styling. They can make Photoshop. It doesn't have to be Photoshop, but you know what I mean? They can draw. They can use everything that comes with it from that device point of view. Mm. I said, look, if you get community days or if you get a couple of hours, go and help your local elementary or secondary schools. You know what? Get these things implemented. Get them and helping them to be able to do these kind of things. I mean, there's lots of things we've not had chance to talk about, and we could have gone in more about school data sync. School data just pulls out from the MIS and goes and creates every single classroom in Microsoft Classroom. For you. Well, instantly, that's to save teachers huge amounts of time, and they can spend more time thinking about the kids. So I got lots of stories on provisioning and using my mother as a provisioning engine and all that kind of thing. But that may be for another day. But there's lots of distinct things that we learn from here. I'm always looking at the PMP stuff because, you know, at the end of the day, some of those can go straight in and help the kids and the students to be able to deliver more and more stuff.
Oh, yeah. I mean, especially the provisioning stuff. I mean, I can see that being a huge, when you bring a school district online, I mean, there's even more so than an enterprise, there's a lot of different things that need to get built up and spun up for schools. I mean, having each thing, not only having an environment spun up for a school, but also for like a department within the school and then different classrooms in the school. And it isn't like, if you think about it, when you're comparing it to like the commercial space, you have the same thing that needs to get done like every single semester or every single year. Like you've got, today's the first day of school. I've got tons of classes that are starting up for the first time. And then everybody's going to cycle out of all those classes. They're all going to go into brand new classes. And all the data is going to change. The structure and the process is all going to be similar in terms of we need to go through and reprovision all this stuff, but all the users are different. So it's not like an evergreen kind of a thing. It's constantly changing. It's constantly having new people, new data coming in, but how they work with it, that's the part that may not change nearly as much. So I can definitely see the PMP stuff being very applicable to what you guys are doing in the education space.
Yeah. No, it's exciting times. Things are always changing. Things are always being added. I mean, just in the last 6 months, we've had Classroom, Office Forms, Minecraft, PLC. There's loads of stuff that's being added. It's just, you know what, let's stay on top of it. Make sure it's e-safety aware for students, because if you're in one big tenant and they've got everyone being able to search for every other student's profile across different schools, then that can cause a few issues with some of the e-safety stuff. But that's kind of the challenge that we've got in the education space.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, hey, Alex, I really appreciate the time you take with us today to talk about this. I know this has been very educational for me, but also hopefully for our listeners as well. If someone wants to find out more information, connect with you, I mean, definitely we're going to put a link to your podcast in our show notes here, but where can they find you? Where are you going to be next? Where's the best way to reach out to you?
Actually, I'm at Ignite in a couple of weeks. We're going to be doing an education meetup while we're there.
Oh, cool.
So if you're at Ignite, do come along. I don't know what those times or plans are or anything like that. So do come along. It may well be out actually by the time this podcast goes out, but maybe I can tweet that so you can follow me on Alex_ Brian Pierce and find on there. And I'm also doing a session on how the millennial generation are using Office 365. Is your enterprise ready?
Oh, very so cool.
Actually, we're going to talk about some of these and we'll see if you guys are ready with Office Mix, Office Lens, Forms, Groups, and making sure that, you know what, you guys can take the benefit of these students coming out so they can achieve just as much as what they were doing in university in your enterprise.
Awesome. Hey, that's cool. That's great to hear. Well, Alex, hey, thanks a lot for coming on the show today. And I'll definitely make sure that we have all those links that we've talked about today and how to get in touch with you, links to your podcast, and also to you on Twitter and everything up on our show. And like you said, if there's anything that comes up, you know, any of the links you want to share with me that I want to put out there, like, you know, link to your session at Ignite, link to the meetup, if you've got a link to where you can actually send them to or something, make sure you get that stuff to me and I'll make sure that our listeners get a hold of it.
Nice one. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thanks, Alex. Did you like this episode? Send us a tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review in iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a wave or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Air by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.